right. Good morning, everyone. First of all, thank you so much for trekking out here in the sleet and the rain. And I'm not just thanking my parents who are here, but thank you to everyone who came. I think it's a really important topic, and that's why I chose it. I was hoping that we'd have this place bursting with 200 people. So now it's the job of everyone here who learns about this topic to go spread that information, because I think it's a really significant issue to discuss. And what I have to discuss this morning are two issues. The first thing you should know is I really would like this to be interactive. So if you have a question at any point, if you have a comment at any point, you're more than welcome to ask it, say it. It's no comment is unhelpful. I'm sure they'll all be helpful. Dad, can you hear me? Great. What we're going to talk about this morning are two things. I didn't really know how to word it because I don't necessarily know all the PC terminology, so please forgive me if I say something that's not quite PC. Trust me, it is a very PC shiur. We're looking through a halachic lens at two different groups of people who are in our communities who, thank God, these days get a lot of attention, but people don't necessarily study the halachic ramifications of these categories, so to speak. And those are, firstly, we're going to talk about people who have mental illnesses, psychoses of sort. And secondly, we're going to talk about people who have developmental disabilities. And what we're going to try to find out this morning is the answer to the following question. And I hope people appreciate the way this question is worded, as opposed to thinking, oh, that's terrible, or oh, that's great, or just bear with us, okay? Here's the question, and we can hear people's opinions right away before we even look at a source. The question is, if you have a person who needs special attention, medical attention, emotional attention, psychological attention, and the only facility that can offer that and accommodate this person's needs is a facility in which they will not get kosher food and they really won't be able to follow halacha when they're in this place. You know, from kosher food to keeping Shabbos properly. The question is, what do you do? And I think this was probably a bigger issue many years ago, but you'd be surprised, this is an issue that plagues people even today. So let's take our first example. A person with mental illness. Let's talk about someone who's a schizophrenic. Medication is not helping them, they're a schizophrenic. And they need to be in a particular clinic. It's the only place for them to be. There's no kosher food. It's just not an option. There's too much going on in that clinic. You can't shuttle it in. Lubavitch can't do their thing. You know, they haven't hit that part of the world yet. Okay, they have Istanbul. They have, you know, Zimbabwe, but we haven't hit that yet. Okay? What do you do? Can you send that person to get the help that they need? Send them to live in that clinic. What do you think? Let's get a poll. Who thinks you can send that person there? And I'm not going to reveal anything. Who thinks that you cannot? Wow. Wow, forget it, I'm not going to give this year. If it bothers people that I'm walking around, just sort of do something that makes it look like, I don't know, it's too ADD or something. Or I could leave it to, yeah? Ah, so you're talking about something that is a pikuach nefesh issue. So pikuach nefesh issues aside, okay? Great point. You are... Mrs. Schaefer, okay. And you're a psychologist. Oh, this is, we're gonna call on you again. You're not finished. Thank you. Okay, so Dr. Schaefer says that it may be an issue of pikuach nefesh. That, I think, I didn't even include the sources on that today. There's a very interesting tshuva by Rav Moshe about someone who is clinically depressed, and an element of their depression is that they really can't be forced into any disciplinary activity. And the shaila that was asked him is, can you tell a person like that to fast on Yom Kippur? And he said, absolutely not. It's a case of pikuach nefesh. If you're worried that this person may become violent to others or to himself or herself, it certainly is not okay. So that's definitely, there's a lot of literature, vast literature on that. Let's talk about somebody who just needs, you know, their daily dose, so to speak. Okay. Someone who's developmentally disabled, do we think the answer is the same? Intuitively, no. If someone wants to comment further, expand on it a little? Yes. Okay. Okay.
Right, you're saying, let's not look at this as a uniform category of people. We don't look at people as a uniform category. There are differences between old and young. There are differences perhaps between mental age as well.
Oh, Pianko. I'm a big fan of the Pianko family. That's, if that works for anyone. Okay, so let's get started. We have sources in front of us. Let's get started. First of all, can I just figure out here who here came from outside of New York? From Jersey. I just think he's here around for plus. Okay, so we're going to start with the Tosefta. Okay, this is number one, source number one. What the Tosefta is you have in Torah Baal Peh, if you look in a Gemara, you have a Mishnah, and then on the Mishnah you have a Gemara that explains it. There's something called a Braita, and there's something called a Tosefta. Both of those are things that were written, they weren't really written at the beginning, but both of those were things that were transmitted at the same time as the Mishnah, but they didn't make it into the Mishnah. For whatever reason, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, when he was anthologizing the Mishnah, he decided that these did not make it. Often the Tosefta will go into greater detail than a Braita or than a Mishnah, which is why we often look at the Tosefta. So we're starting with the Tosefta in Shrumot. Has anyone ever heard the word Shota before? Okay, great. So the first category that we're going to talk about is a Shota. Ezehu Shota, you're all with me? Ezehu Shota. What is a Shota? Who is the category of a Shota? What they used to call a Shota was an idiot. That's what they call the Shota. We obviously don't call a Shota an idiot anymore, but this is the terminology. Hayotze yichidi balayla, a person who goes out alone at night. My mom always told me you'd have to be an idiot to go out alone at night. It's true. But I don't think that's what she meant. Vahalan bivet hakvarot, one who sleeps in cemeteries. Vahamekareya et ksuto, one who tears his clothes. Vahameabed mashinot nilo, and a person who destroys everything you give to him. Pa'amim shote, pa'amim chalom. If a person is sometimes a shote and other times perfectly lucid, zeh haklal, here's the rule. Kolzman sheshote, at the moments when he is acting as a shote, harehu keshote l'chol davar. He is considered a shote completely, but v'chalom, at the moments that he is acting lucid, harehu kepikeach l'chol davar. He is like a regular person for everything. We don't know what the ramifications of being a shote are yet, and being a pikeach. But suffice it to say, right now I'm just trying to define the term shote. Based on that Tosefta, someone give me a definition. You have to work here. It's already 10:50. Come on, you gotta be waiting for me since 9:30. Wait, doctor, it's cheap. You know too much. What? Nuts. Okay. A schizophrenic. Okay, so this is interesting, okay? First of all, the Gemara in Chagiga, I wrote in parentheses, I knew Gam B'Chagiga, Gam Gimel Amid Bet. I didn't want to bury us in so much material, but it's definitely an interesting thing to take a look at. The Gemara discusses, well, what are these, why did the Tosefta give examples? Right? Someone who goes out alone at night, somebody who sleeps in a cemetery, somebody who does this, that, and the other. Does it mean that he has to do all of these things? Does it mean that he has to do one of these things, but it makes no sense? What if he has an explanation for what he's doing? And the Gemara basically concludes that if he's doing these things for a crazy reason, then he falls into the category of Shota. But one second, something that may surprise you. I'm pretty sure the Maharik, he's from Cologne, I think he's 13th century. Number two, he says, and this was a trend. It wasn't so popular, but very interesting, and you'll see the ramifications are quite broad. Eino nechshav shote ela im kein. A person is only considered a shote if mikarei ksuto, if he tears his clothes, olan bevet hakvarot, or sleeps in a cemetery, o yetze balayla, or yatza balayla yichidi, or goes out alone at night. Kidiita beperakama, as it says in the first parak, and he's really talking about the first parak of Chagiga. The Maharik thought that it was only if you do these three things. And I think one of the reasons why he thought that is because, as we're going to see, a shote is a category of person who is a Jew, who's an adult, but who does not have any requirement to do any mitzvah. So the Maharik wanted to limit it. It's just what the Gemara says and no further. Dr. Schaefer, what do you think of that? Interesting, right? Do you think those categories, you think the categories make sense? You wouldn't broaden them to broader categories, or you're saying this is just a real severe mental illness, that's a shote, and lighter mental illnesses are not?
You wouldn't say.
Okay. I'm sorry that I just made you the town expert, but you clearly are. Okay. So that's the Ma'arik. But one moment. Let's look at how the Shulchan Aruch does it. The Shulchan Aruch is following the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch says as follows. Number 3. Kol mi shenitrafa da'ato. Anyone who literally, you know, his mind is torn to pieces. Right? Taruf Taraf Yosef, we just read. Right? His mind is torn to pieces. Someone who's crazy. V'nimtzei da'ato mishubeshet tamid. And he's constantly confused. B'davar mihadvarim in all regards. Even if that person can hold a conversation, hareza pasul, this person is pasul for edut, this person cannot be a witness, ubechlal shotim yechashev, and that person is a shoter. So the real trend, the majority trend, is to say, as was stated intuitively by Ms. Breyer, as was stated intuitively, that it just means the person is nuts. These are just 3 examples of a person who sort of has gone out of reality in a certain sense. Okay? And I'm using nuts in quotes because it's, you know, it's not our PC term. But a shogun, that's our first category. What are the ramifications of being a shogun? Before we find out, let's find out from a psychiatrist. Number 4, he wrote a very interesting article, Halachic Sensitivity to the Psychotic Individual. Definitely something to check out if you have a broader interest in this topic. And we're going to refer to him a number of times over the course of this discussion. The shota is best understood today as manifesting symptoms typical of the insane, in clinical terms, the psychotic individual. Psychosis may be defined as the state in which an individual lacks the ability to distinguish fantasy from reality. With gross impairment of reality testing and insight, the psychotic individual incorrectly evaluates perceptions and thoughts, and in so doing, makes incorrect inferences about external reality despite evidence to the contrary. Okay, that's our shogun. Someone can't tell the difference between reality and sort of fantasy. And for that reason, that person presumably is possibly, that person cannot be a witness. Right? Make sense? Watch this. Let's go one step further. The Rambam, in codifying why it is that a shogun cannot give edut, cannot give testimony, doesn't say it's because his sense of reality is impaired. He says something a little more extreme. Hashote pasul le'edut min haTorah, this is number 5. The shote is biblically nullified, cannot be an aid. Lefi she'eino ben mitzvot. Because he's not a ben mitzvot. V'lo shoteh shehu malech arom, he says, and it's not just the shoteh who walks around naked or sleeps in a cemetery, it says, but just, it really applies to everyone. Now, when the Rambam says that a shoteh cannot give edut, not because he's not lucid or he didn't see something, but because he's not Jewish. He's not a ben mitzvot. Reactions. That's why I said he's not Jewish. I wanted to see people's reaction. I wish everyone had. It's not that he's not Jewish. He's a katan, you say. Interesting. You say he's not a ben mitzvot means he's a katan. Wait, I just want to challenge that for 1 second. Wait, I should know. Thank you, Mr. Ringo. Sorry, I should know. She says he's a katan. He's not a non-Jew. He's a katan. I want to challenge something. The Gemara often says, when we talk about a katan, he's not a bar da'at. We only say he's not a ben mitzvot. We say, bar mitzvot, that's a little colloquial. Here, he's not having a big party where all of his grandparents are invited. But I hear what you're saying. I want to challenge you in terms of the lashon, the language that's used to ben mitzvot. But great. Yes. Yes. Great. I want to suggest the following, okay? This is a very interesting... Actually, let's do one more thing. Do we have any more comments on that very controversial... I should say it into this very controversial statement that we're not going to stick with. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Okay, what do you... The question is... Oh, well, he goes on to define shoteh. if we want to read it, he says, "V'lo shoteshu malech arom u'mishaber kelim." It's not just someone who walks around naked and breaks things, v'zorek avanim bilvad, and just somebody who throws stones all over the place. Ela kol mishenitrufa dato v'nimseit dato mishubeshet tamid b'devar min hazgarim. It's just the person who gets totally confused, which is where the Shulchan Aruch got this from. He takes from the Rambam. But I'm glad that you sensitized us to that. Other comments? Yes. Alam, yes. I don't even know. It's just the alam. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. You're thinking. Excellent. Oh. Fair. Simeon. Excellent point. She said, someone who isn't Jewish is not allowed to keep Shabbos, for example. But someone who's Jewish but isn't a ben mitzvah, he can do mitzvot. What if he chooses to keep Shabbos? He absolutely can. Why are you saying it like that? Okay? What else? What else? I keep this coming. It means people are listening. Yes. What Alana was saying. The reason why I said it this way, the reason why I said isn't Jewish, is to sensitize people to the fact that looking through a halachic lens, I think it's very important that we appreciate that we're not trying to relegate the shota to a status of a non-Jew, which is often what people do sort of naturally. They get incensed. What do you mean? Just because this person has mental illness, you're telling them they don't have to keep it? So it's not necessarily a bad thing. Right? That's why I said it as a negative, to make you all realize that it's not a negative. It's a status issue, and I think we can probably think of some very humane reasons why it applies. Okay? Let's read further in order to understand sort of the quality of this kind of tour, him not being a ben mitzvah. Number 6. Achal kizayit matzah, v'hu nichpeh be'et shtuto. If a person ate a kizayit of matzah on Pesach, while he's in a state of insanity, while he's in a state, okay? Va'achar kach nitrapeh, and then he is lucid again. Chayav le'echol achar shenitrapeh. He then has a chiyuv to eat matzah when he's in a lucid state. Lefi she'ota achila haita b'sha'a she'aya patur mikol ha'mitzvot. Because when he ate, when he was in his sense of shtut, it was when he was putter. Now, what are we trying to say about this particular shota? He's putter for mitzvah, exactly. It gets a little dicey, because there are actually three versions of the shota in the Gemara. One moment. There's the classic shota, whose we assume is a shota all the time, and Dr. Ralph Strauss will tell us what that is. There's someone eating shota, eating chalim, someone who is sometimes more of a shota, sometimes more sort of involved in a realistic existence, and Dr. Strauss will tell us what that is also. And then there's something called shota ledavarecha, someone who is, there's one issue that fixates this person, and we'll see. All three of these people have different statuses. But what I want you to see is that here we have a person who 10 minutes ago we said was not a ben mitzvah, and now we say he has a fear to eat matzah. So that's very important to me that people know that. Now, it's very possible that when you look at somebody who's constantly a shota, this is obviously, this matzah example is an eating shota, eating chalim, somebody who is sometimes a shota, sometimes healthy mentally. But it's possible that somebody who's a shota all the time is just, there's a different layer, but there's a different status for him, but we'll talk about it in a minute. Yes. Mishubeshet Tamid, the implication is he always has a loose grasp on reality, even if he can tell you, you know, that chair is black. Great question. We're going to get there. Great question. Great question. Yes. Yeah. Right. He has no chiyuv. Right. He's not at all on the scale of mitzvah and aveva. Excellent point in terms of what Alana said, that he can keep Shabbos, but there's either way, meaning maybe it's a personal, it does something for him personally. Which is why I want to point something out before we go on. There's a big machloket. If we were doing sort of a more lumdus oriented shir, if we were looking into the sugyas about this issue, okay? What we would do is we would talk about the question of whether the reason why a shoten doesn't have a chiyuv in mitzvah is because he's not a bar daat, because he's sort of like a katan, sort of like a minor, and we just assume that he's sort of like a minor in every respect, in every regard. And in that sense, we would say it's more like he's pater from mitzvah. But if he did them, he would gain something, sort of like a woman who doesn't have to sit in a sukkah, but if she does so, she gains a mitzvah. Or is it, what's being pointed out right now, is it possible that there's something called a hafka? A hafka is when you break the bonds. It's not that he's pater from mitzvah. It's that he doesn't enter that arena unless he's chalal, unless he's healthy. Doesn't mean he's not Jewish. It means he's not on that whole continuum. He has no pressure, no kiyum. He doesn't violate anything, and he doesn't accomplish anything. He doesn't have that kind of pressure. That's something that I want you to think about. We're not going to finish it. We're going to get back to it. Yeah. One would think so. If it's Itim Chalim, which is going to be a difference between a developmentally disabled person and a mentally ill person. Okay? We're running out of time, so let's make this happen. Okay, this is a fascinating situation. A question was posed. This is, okay. I want to skip to see the following question that was posed in what century? Let's try to remember. Number 10, okay? This is a wild situation. And anyone who has a son-in-law like this, I'm sorry. Okay, here we go, number 10. The situation that is brought to Rav Moshe's door, Be'inyan shotel davar echad. Okay, we're skipping to that. So far we've seen a complete shote, eno ben mitzvah. We've seen itim shote, itim chalem. He's pater for mitzvah, and chayim on his chalem. Now we're going to see shotel davar echad. Okay, I promise that this will be neatly tied up in a packet before you go home. Okay? Be'inyan shote ledavar echad, someone who is just a shote in one area, im ra'ui legerushin, if that person can give someone a get. Okay? That's a big question. You have to be a bar da to give a get. A complete shote cannot give a get. What about a shote ledavar echad? So look at this story. Uvda ata liyadi be'echad she'od bevachruto nishtatem. I heard of a situation, someone asked me a question about a young man who became a shote in his youth. Ushtutohu, and what was his shtut? She'amara latzmo shehu mashiach. He thought it was the Messiah, which he probably won every domestic dispute, because he's the mashiach and that trumps. So it's time to separate, okay? He thinks he's the Messiah, they're going out to the movies with friends, and they're going to see the Passion, and he thinks he's on the screen. He thinks he's the Messiah, okay? Now, I'm not making fun of mental illness. I'm just trying to get a cheap laugh, I promise, okay? Okay, I'm not even making fun of the movie. V'zega ramlo la'asot od ma'aseh shtut. This caused him, unfortunately, this believing that he was Mashiach, caused him to do other things that were shtut. And the examples that are given in here, if we were to read through, he would run around the town naked, he would grab a sacred Torah and run out of town with it. He would do, unfortunately, this was his issue, okay? The question was, can he give a get? That's a very important question. Okay, he got married and he became a shoket ledavar echad after the wedding. Okay? Okay. So it's very interesting. He says, let's skip to the second paragraph. Actually, I even want to read a few words within the first paragraph. You see where the sentence "Vilif Amim Halach Arum" starts? It's three lines up, or three and a word lines up from the bottom after the period. People are there. Vilif Amim Halach Arum. Sometimes he would walk around naked. Why would he walk around naked? He had an explanation. It's because he was like Adam before the sin. And his shtut was all a result of the fact that he thought he was Mashiach. It's not that in general he did things that were irrational. They were all based on his irrational belief that he was Mashiach. He felt that he needed to fix things. He held down a steady job. He was a regular pikeach. He was a regular person who understood everything. It was just this one thing. He thought he was the Mashiach. Bahavanata davar v'zocher v'yodea kol midaber shoel kinyan. Perfect grasp on reality, except for this one little thing. Okay, this one little thing. V'im kein yatzal lanu shebuvdal didan, says Rav Moshe, and therefore I think in our situation, afim nechshav l'shote. Even if I consider him a shote ledavar echad, in this one thought that he's the Mashiach, v'af bizman she'asa maaseh shtut sheledat Rambam hu keshote, and even if he did maaseh shtut, which the Rambam says, there's a generalized, if you ever do a maaseh shtut, you're a shote, af shelo asa maasim shemifurashim bin chagiga, even though he didn't do the things that were stipulated in chagiga or in our Tosefta, mikol makom hahu shote rak le'ezeh devarim. He's only a shote for some things. Aval l'sharei devarim, but for other things, uvichlalam, including l'inyan gerushin, kiddushin. The kiddushin is tough to imagine how that situation would have come about. Hu pikeach bivarur, or bivarur. He's totally pikeach. He's totally on target. L'chein yesh lo dinei pikeach l'gerushin v'yachol garesh. Therefore, he can be gerushin. And the best line of the whole tshuva is where Moshe says, v'sidarti et haget. And I myself helped him get this get into writing. I watched him give it to the wife. I was there, right? Very interesting. Right up from this, number 9. Categories defined by Chazal include the following. Shote Gamur, completely insane, perhaps best illustrated by the chronic schizophrenic patient, whose prognosis remains poor and whose baseline functioning is seldom regained. Shote who exhibits itim chalim, itim shote, cycles in and out of psychosis. For example, the manic depressive, bipolar patient, for whom the prognosis is generally good and who may be considered sane and competent when not cycling in the psychotic state. Shote ledavar echad who is insane in only one domain, remaining sane and coherent in all others, as seen in the contemporary delusional order, in which there is a fixed manifestation of non-bizarre delusions involving situations that may occur in real life, such as being followed, poisoned, infected, deceived, diseased, etc. This individual, despite remaining psychotic in a specific area, may be adjudged competent to engage in certain other domains of responsibility and obligation, which would otherwise remain off limits to other children. The degree of sensitivity in this literature, to me, is unbelievable. That they were able to recognize the difference between someone who's a shote, gomor, a complete shote, and someone who's itim chalim, and itim shote, itim chalim, and someone who's shote and barachat, and to have the sensitivity to say, the one who is constantly a shote is not a bet mitzvah. Now, you can explain it to yourself. I explain it to myself very simply, saying, the one who's constantly a shote is not a bet mitzvah, because how can you force someone like that into some sort of discipline? It's unfair. It's not a normal life. It doesn't work for them. It doesn't make any sense. You can look at it differently also. It just doesn't do what it does for other people, for that person. One more. I want to throw in one more monkey wrench. Okay? I want to look at what Rabbi Bleich says about having to teach a shote child Torah, number 8. And this goes directly to the question of whether a shote has a hafka from all mitzvot, is completely separated from all mitzvot, or just patur. Very interesting. Number 8. Rabbi Blank, for people who are not familiar with him, He's really special. He teaches at Cardoza. He's also a Rosh Yeshiva at YU. He's very involved in contemporary halachic problems. He has a very interesting series of books called Contemporary Halachic Problems. Judge a book by its title, I guess. So this is what he says. A father is obliged to teach his son Torah by virtue of a twofold obligation. One rabbinic, the second biblical. The rabbinic obligation encompassed within the obligation of chinuch. Rabbinically, a father has to teach his son Torah because of chinuch. Does not include a shote. There's no such thing, because you're mechanic, you're teaching the child. Remember, this is only shote gamur. You're teaching the child to grow up and do mitzvah, but this child doesn't have to. But, however, with regard to the biblical obligation to teach Torah, there appears to be no grounds to distinguish between a shote and a child of normal mental capacity. The commandment, "and you shall teach them to your children," is not predicated upon the capacity of the child to perform the mitzvah upon reaching the age of halachic capacity. A father is obligated to instruct his son in the biblical passages concerning Shabbat and Tefillin, not in order that the child become a Sabbath observer and don Tefillin, but by virtue of the intrinsic mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Wow. If you had a question in your mind, is this kid Jewish? Of course this kid is Jewish. The parent has a responsibility to teach things to this child, but there's no expectation that the child has a chiyuv in mitzvah. Remember, this is only a shote gamur. An itim shote, itim chalim, someone who cycles in and out, there's absolutely a mitzvah of chinuch, because when that child is lucid, that child must do mitzvah like anyone else. Shote l'davar achad, absolutely a responsibility to that child. Not just a mitzvah to teach Torah, a mitzvah to teach mitzvah, to send the kid to school, to make special schools for kids who need it. And I'll add one more thing before I take a question that I saw in the audience. Someone who takes medication, who naturally would be a shote, but is not because they're on medication, is not a shote. Thank God we live in that kind of society. But you see, it's just incredible the way that halacha actually anticipated what was going on. So few things can we actually see in our ancient writings where even today it would be the exact, we would think of it the exact same way. Incredible. Question? Yeah. And then we're going to move on to developmental disease. Perfect segue, number 7, and with this we end the show section. Someone asked the question about putting the child into a facility where there's no kosher food. A shote, child into a facility where there's no kosher food. Number 7, b'inyan bat shote, a young woman who's a shote, im rashai ha'av l'mosra l'institution, I love that. If the father can put her into an institution, shel ha-medina, a government institution, she'ochlin sham isrin, they eat non-kosher food there, ve'im mutar la-harshot la-harufim l'sarsa, and if the doctors, now this is obviously pretty early on, the doctors, you know, don't want her to be able to have children, that, you know, we obviously don't allow such things in general halachically, so the question was, for whatever reason, they thought she couldn't deal with it mentally, it would be too hard on her, so they didn't want her to be able to have children. Can you allow them to do such things? Kidei shelo techaleh, so that she won't become more ill. And Rav Moshe says, be'uvda didan, in the bold, in our situation, shelafi derech ha-teva, that naturally, meaning normal expectations would dictate that lo titrape, that she won't get better, v'lo tavo le'olam l'chiyuv mitzvot, and she will never have a chiyuv mitzvot, yesh lo hatir. But what does that imply? If there is any indication that there will be a time when this child will be able to be healed in this sense, you absolutely have a responsibility to this child. This is really no child left behind. It's an incredible concept. You know, someone comes into shul who's a little bit off, and everybody avoids that person, except there's one nice person who goes over to them and talks to them. Right? It's a chiyuv. They're part of the community. Okay. That's piece one, to just wrap it up nicely, okay? A shote. Three categories. One is a shote gamur, person who will never be required to do mitzvah, and that may mean that they're completely mufka, they're completely separated from the world of mitzvah. That may mean that they're just pater for mitzvah. Such a person argues Rabbi Blythe. I don't think that everyone would agree with him, but I thought it was important to bring in. Argues Rabbi Blythe that a parent has a responsibility to teach that child for the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Itim shote itim chalim. That's a person where in their chalim state, in their lucid, meaning realistic state, or a state in which they are in touch with reality, they have a feeling of mitzvah, absolutely. When they are not in a realistic moment, they do not. Shote l'davar achad, someone who's fixated on one particular issue, paranoia, whatever it may be, they can do other things that don't relate to that issue. So what you asked before about saying that they're high in some parts or others, it actually seems like they're pretty much high in everything unless their illness, you know, prohibits it. Okay, let's move on. Developmentally disabled. Okay, this is a completely different situation. Let's look at number 11. Just to recall, when I was younger, I used to tutor a person by the name of Daniel Grossman in TM. There may be some people here who may know who he is. I think he has an IQ of 145, but he unfortunately has social issues. You know, I don't know exactly what he had. I was kind of young at the time. I didn't realize. And it just always amazed me the way that he went to Keter Torah. He went to Romer. And he had a bar mitzvah there, and I remember I went to the bar mitzvah, and he leaned, and I always wondered to myself, you know, secretly, sort of behind, in my own mind, I didn't say it to anyone, I always wondered to myself, you know, is this, I don't know, like, is this bending the rules? I'm so happy that he got to do it, but is this allowed? Is this bending the rules? What exactly, you know, how do we take care of people in our community who are developmentally disabled? And when I started researching it, I was very happy with what I found. Who is not a shogeg? Number 11. Now the person I'm quoting here, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, that sits Eliezer, he was, if I'm not mistaken, the posig for Shaare Tzedek Hospital in the 20th century. He passed away a little while ago, but he is no lightweight, and he also was very involved in some medical issues. Even those who are mentally disabled, whose intellect is underdeveloped, and that goes back to the question someone brought up about the differences, whose intellect is underdeveloped and do not comprehend things as other people do not fall under the category of a shogeg. They are only disqualified from being witnesses in a court of law, as they sometimes cannot recognize contradictory statements, but they are certainly subject to the mitzvot, even capable of gittin and kiddushin, marriage and divorce, if they can understand these things when they are properly explained to them. Therefore, an adult with an IQ of a 7 to 10-year-old should be taken out of a non-kosher institution, as opposed to the shogeg. And this is the responsibility of the community and its leadership. Number 12, the Rambam. Hapitan biyotir, people who are excessively, it seems that he's saying below a certain IQ line, she'ein makirim dvarim shesotrim ze'etze, can't really tell when things contradict each other, and don't understand things the way other people do. Also people who get excessively anxious, people who sort of, their mind sort of runs back and forth with them. And people just get wrought or overwrought. Hare elu b'chlal ha-shotim. It says these people are included in the category of shotim. B'davar ze levi mashi yira el dayan she'i efshar l'chavin hadat b'chatav. I can't really tell you what that category is. It's according to, remember, this is all in the situation of being giving me dudes, of being a witness, that the dayan, the judge, has to figure it out. People seem to think that perhaps this is what the Rambam was alluding to when he says that he's perhaps alluding to the developmentally disabled, and though he says they're bichlal shotim, it's only taken for the purpose of being puzzled that he do it. Let's just see a few more, and then we can all go home to our warm homes. Okay? Rav Moshe Feinstein, the definition of the shota does not depend on the ability to understand ideas and concepts.